From WGCU, this is Gulf Coast Live. I'm Julie Glenn. Fidel Castro died Friday, and the death of the communist revolutionary leaves Cubans and Cuban Americans looking back on his past and wondering about Cuba's future. Coming up, we speak with members of Southwest Florida's Cuban community about why many are celebrating what they call the death of a tyrant, while others wonder what Castro's death means for the future of Cuba. Plus, craft beer is everywhere today, but less than a decade ago, you'd be hard-pressed to find a locally brewed beer on the shelves of Southwest Florida stores. Coming up, a conversation with local brewing pioneers who helped bring the craft beer revolution to our part of Florida. First, the news. Welcome back to Gulf Coast Live. I'm Julie Glenn. Beer was once the go-to beverage when drinking water in cities was so filthy people preferred the purity of malted hops and barley. On this day in 1487, the first version of the German beer purity law was passed in Munich. And then, once Bavaria was united, it was adopted nationally. And now it's been 500 years exactly since the Reinheitsgebot, or purity order, was passed. And its parameters have been in force in Germany ever since, stating that the only three ingredients allowed in making beer are hops, water, and barley. Yeast was allowed into the mix in the 1700s, but that basic recipe is still revered in much of Germany. Yet here in America, it's a different story, particularly in recent years. Led by local craft brewers and home brewers, the American beer landscape has become as varied as the terrain of our 50 states. Here in Southwest Florida, the local craft beer industry, which was once held back by statewide container size laws, is now booming. Here to talk about the state of our beer in our part of Florida are two of the local pioneers of the business from Naples Beach Brewery. We have Will Lawson from Fort Myers Brewing Company. We have Vice President, Salesman, and all other jobs that need to be done guy, Fred Malone. And we are also joined by Don Story of Brew Story, which is a local home brewer supply store, and which is apparently where all of this begins. People brew at home, find they have a talent, and they decide to go into business, sort of a cottage industry. We're talking with Southwest Florida craft beer and changes to traditional beer that we're seeing here and from home brewers and craft breweries. Call in with your thoughts or maybe your favorite beer at 1-877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. Give us a tag on Facebook, shout out at WGCU Public Media, or you can tweet us at WGCU using the hashtag GCL. Will Lawson with the Naples Beach Brewery. You moved here from Michigan.
Yes.
And you wanted to work, you were working in a golf course as a superintendent. And tell us what happened to make you make this leap.
You know, moved down to the Southwest Florida area in 2003 in the golf course industry, and was really getting into craft beers in Michigan when I was leaving in 2003. So I was expecting to see the same kind of craft beer popularity here in Southwest Florida, and was pretty surprised when I didn't find any craft beer. Not just local craft beer, but no craft beer from other national brands was present here in any of the stores at that time either. So decided to start home brewing as a hobby, trying to put my own beer in bottles in my own refrigerator to drink at home, and just kind of fell in love with the passion of the craft beer industry, and as well as the process of the making the beer.
And then you decided to make the leap, and you...
Absolutely, yeah. Basically home brewed for a couple of years and then decided I wanted to be a brewer. So my original plan was to work at another brewery as a brewer. So quit my job and went to school to learn to be a brewer. So took a course out of Chicago and Munich, Germany, and then worked as an apprentice at a brewery for 3 years. During that time, really decided I wanted to be an entrepreneur, and decided that Naples would be the place that I wanted to bring craft beer to. And at that time, it was a good choice. Obviously, nothing had been going on there, and that was about 7 or 8 years after my original leap into craft beer.
Well, that's a great story. Fred Malone, can you tell me what got Fort Myers Brewing Company started?
Rob White and Jen Gratz. Rob was from San Diego, and he had homebrewed for roughly 10 years, and he also volunteered at Oceanside Ale Works, which was a craft brewery in San Diego. And he was in the he did security IT stuff before he got into it, and found out that not only homebrewing, he was really good at it, but he also getting the volunteering, never missing a brew day at the Oceanside Ale Works. kind of was a passion that he wanted to do. And when Jen and Rob moved down to Florida, kind of the same thing with Will. They realized that there wasn't a lot of craft beer down here, and they decided to take the leap and start the brewery.
Yeah.
And it's kind of snowballed from there.
And it sounds like the common thread here is home brewing, which makes sense that we have Mr. Story, Don Story, who runs a shop here that does that supplies people that are interested in doing homebrew.
That's correct, yes.
How did you get into that?
I took beer making 101 at LSU about 25 years ago, and it just taught us how to homebrew. And there was very little equipment back then other than carboys and big spaghetti pots to do your homebrew in. We even siphoned by mouth instead of using more sophisticated equipment that we have today. You'd rinse your mouth out with some high alcohol like Jack Daniels or something like that and then just siphon. Today people would cringe at that, you know, because of the germs in your mouth can contaminate your beer.
Oh.
But it was started really back in, I think it was 1981 when I first tasted Sam Adams beer. Pittsburgh Brewing Company was making Sam Adams beer at that time. They were the first ones to do it in the country. And I tasted it, and I thought, wow, this is really different than anything I've ever tasted before. And that's when I started looking for good beer. The eastern part of the country, there weren't any microbreweries at that time. Sam Adams obviously wasn't really in existence. They were contracting with Pittsburgh Brewing Company. But shortly after that, things started happening, and there was a lot more beer to be had in the eastern part of the United States.
Okay. Well, I wanted to ask, I have a room full of people that can help out. I don't know a whole lot about beer, so can we go over some basics? What are some of the terms and beer styles that are kind of new coming out because of craft brewery? Anybody?
I don't know if there's anything really new right now. Well, sours are new to this part of the country. They're not really new. They've been around for hundreds of years, but other parts of the United States have been drinking sours for many years. People in Southwest Florida, most people don't even know what it is, let alone taste it. And when you do taste it for the very first time, it's an interesting experience. I had Sam Adams beer probably 15 years ago. It was a sour, cherry wheat sour, and I actually spit it out, threw it away because I didn't know that's what it was supposed to taste like. Now I love them, absolutely love sour beers. But then IPAs are the most popular, which is India Pale Ale. There's just so many different styles of beer that I don't know if anyone can actually invent a new one because there's so many that people – you can put anything in beer and make it taste good.
Unless you're adhering to the German pure beer.
Even they don't adhere to that anymore.
I know. Yeah. It's kind of a marketing tool lately. But what is a sour? What does that mean?
You guys could explain that better than I could.
Yeah. Basically, it's a – so beer's fermented with brewer's yeast. Sour is – so the beer goes through a primary fermentation with traditional strains of brewer's yeast, and then a souring bacteria is introduced to the finished beer, which then continues to work on any sugars that are left behind by the original strain of yeast. And a souring flavor develops in the beer. The pH level goes extremely low. You get an increased alcohol, obviously, from the original fermentation. A lot of your most popular souring bacteria are Pediococcus, Lactobacillus. You know, a wild strain of yeast that's popular in the brewing world is Brettanomyces. Brettanomyces doesn't necessarily sour, but it actually leads the way for some souring cultures to really build a complex beer.
I'm familiar about that one with wine because I do have that in some wineries, and that's considered a defect in a lot of wines.
Correct. And it's considered a defect in a primary fermentation of beer as well. So you really have to be careful when you introduce these bacteria and these wild strains of yeast to your brewery because they can obviously spoil your quote-unquote house beers.
So being a brewer is almost like being a chemist, it sounds like.
A lot of chemistry, a lot of microbiology for sure. Yes, absolutely. I would definitely recommend people who want to get into the brewing industry to become familiar with chemistry and some microbiology as well.
You have to know your science.
Absolutely.
Well, because there are agricultural ingredients involved here too. You have hops and barley, and those can vary, correct?
That's correct. I mean, year to year, soil, regions of the world, everything has to do with the growing conditions of those particular raw materials as well.
And about time of harvest, does that make a difference with hops?
Absolutely, it does. Yeah. And you know, times of harvest here in the United States may be different. In the Pacific Northwest of the United States may be a little bit different than in Bavaria, maybe a little bit different than Australia and New Zealand, which are now growing popular hops as well. So a lot of variables to make consistent beer. Your large breweries, large craft breweries as well, really need to be on top of the monitoring of these raw materials to make consistent beers.
And then I talked with you earlier about this, about back when they actually passed this law 500 years ago. That was a different era. That was before the Industrial Revolution, and that was when they were drying the grains that had been soaked and germinated, I guess. They would dry them using burning wood, so sure. That would be smoked. Mm-hmm. And that's a type of beer called a smoked beer.
Yep. Smoked beer in Germany, you know, in that origin of traditional smoked beer is Rauch beer, and it's in the Bamberg region of Germany. And they were using wood fires to dry and kiln their malts for brewing purposes. So obviously the wood fires were lending some of that smoke character to the malts, whether they were intending for that to happen or not, it was happening. So a lot of times you'll go to a brewery in Bamberg or a brew house, and you're going to encounter a light, a medium, and a dark version of their smoked beer. That is kind of a throwback to the tradition of that type of kilning and drying of the malt.
That's so interesting to me. And you said that you do one of those.
Yeah. I mean, we don't actually smoke our own malt, but we do buy smoked malt from Bamberg, Germany, from mm-hmm. the Weiermann Malt House in Bamberg, Germany. It's a Beechwood smoked malt, and we brew a smoked beer from that base malt, and that's available at our brewery.
That's pretty – and you do that for the Bacon Fest, which just passed.
That's true. Yes.
But it's annual, so we can look forward to next early November. We're talking about Florida craft beer and the changes to traditional beer that we're seeing from home brewers and craft breweries. So if you'd like to call in with your thoughts or your favorite type of beer or maybe a question, the number is 1-877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK, or give us a Facebook shout-out at WGCU Public Media, or you can tweet us at WGCU using the hashtag GCL. So a common type of craft beer is IPA, India Pale Ale. What is the story with that beer, Fred? Why is that so popular with craft breweries?
Well, I think in this, especially now in this part of Florida, since the local craft beers are coming up, everybody's got an IPA. And I think each of us are doing a different style on the IPA. You have your West Coast and your East Coast. Some of them are more hoppy. Some of them are less hoppy. Little bitter, more bitter. I think people are starting to get kind of their feet wet in the gateway beers that we have. And they're starting to branch out and starting to try IPAs. You know, we do our High Five IPA, which is very popular at our brewery. It's 59 IBUs, so it's not overly bitter.
What does 59 IBU mean?
It's the bitter index for that we use.
Is
very
that,
good.
Is that it? Oh, I guess.
Yeah,
yes.
You did good. That we use. And ours is really, it's kind of, I like to call it user friendly. It's very approachable. And it's just, you know, I think it's kind of your step up for your craft beer drinkers to kind of get them moving towards that direction of moving up the beer scale.
Why is it called India Pale Ale?
So do you guys want to answer this one?
I can
answer. Go ahead. Yeah.
Years ago when England ruled India, part of the soldiers' contracts, I think, was a gallon of beer a day.
Yep.
The English soldiers in India. So the English couldn't make the beer in India. They made it in England and had it on ships sent there, and they found out as their regular beers, their ales, would spoil on the way over to India, and they found out that hop is a preservative in addition to bittering the beer and flavoring the beer. So they put more and more hops into it to preserve it, so when it got to India, it was still drinkable. So that's how it became known as India Pale Ale, highly hopped ales.
That's really interesting. And then what is the double IPA? I've heard this, and then I heard someone tell me once that that's not even possible.
There's even triple IPAs now, but it's more nomenclature, I think, than actual what they are, because the lines are blurred as to what beer styles actually are supposed to be, even though they do have specific guidelines. But a double IPA is just a high-gravity IPA, more alcohol. Same as an Imperial IPA, basically.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So there's Pilsner, correct? Pilsner, lager, ale.
Pilsners are lagers.
Okay, Pilsner and lager are the same thing.
There's only two types of beers, ales and lagers.
Okay, there's only two kinds.
Right.
This isn't – well, where does Guinness fit in on that?
It's a stout and it's an ale.
Okay. How is that determination made?
There's defined styles in the beer world. So if you want to make a stout, there's a set of guidelines, numbers wise. So so when you're brewing the beer, you're going to follow a general flavor, aroma, color index kind of description of that particular style. You can choose whatever raw material, whatever malted barley sources you want, as long as you can get them into these guidelines. So there's a color guideline, there's an alcohol guideline, there's a IBU guideline. Then there's a flavor description, an aroma description, and all those factor into that particular stout style of beer. But there's many, well, I wouldn't say many, but there's a handful of different stouts. There's sweet stout, there's foreign export stout, there's imperial stout, there's American stout. So each one has its own little nuances that make it different from the others. And that's really the trick to brewing and brewing good beer, is understanding those nuances, those flavor differences, and then being able to interpret those into recipe building, and then obviously brewing the beer and making it a finished product.
So it's kind of like there's a family tree, and the trunk is beer, and then you have one branch and another branch, and then they and it's a very big, giant oak tree that's been around for 150 years.
Right.
And a lot of these branches.
Yes. And a lot of these styles are related to each other. So that's a perfect way to describe what's going on with the differences in the ales. And the same thing with lagers and pilsners, too. There's different types of lagers. There's a couple of different types of pilsners. They have similarities, but they have some other things that make them different. So there is like a family tree going on there.
That is incredibly. And then, Don Story, I wanted to ask you, what if somebody kind of likes different craft beers and they're kind of want to get their feet wet and trying to homebrew? I mean, are we talking about a huge investment in a hobby, or can you work your way into it?
If you have nothing as far as equipment is concerned in your house, such as a big spaghetti pot, then you need to start from scratch with all the equipment that you need to make your first batch of beer. And in home brewing, the standard is 5 gallons. Mm-hmm. You don't have to make that much, but the standard, that's what everybody makes normally. Kids come in 5 gallon packages. The kegs that people use, the Cornelius kegs, are 5 gallons. But to get started with equipment and a ingredients kit, which uses extract as opposed to starting from scratch, which is called all grain brewing, it costs about $250.
That's not that much of an investment, especially if it's going to spark a business eventually.
Well, that's what's funny is most breweries have been opened by people that were home brewers, almost all of them. I'm sure there are a few that were doing it for the financial gain. They'd have to have a lot of money to back them in order to – I mean, Will worked for 2 years by himself, if I remember correctly. So he wasn't doing – he wasn't going to the bank every day, that's for sure. But it's just something that it's easy to do. It doesn't take that long, but you have to be very particular.
Do you have to babysit it? I mean, do you have to really stay on it?
When you're making it, yes. Afterwards, no.
How long does it take?
To actually make the beer, it takes about 4 to 5 hours. It's like a round of golf, but you end up with a good product at the end.
And you didn't drink all the beer.
then you have to ferment it, which 2 to 3 weeks, and then age it, depending on the type of beer and what your philosophy is on aging. I'm one of those people who likes to age my beer a long time. A lot of people disagree with me. Breweries don't want to age their beer because it's money sitting in the kegs. So they get their beer out there faster than I would. But I want my beer to be exactly as good as it can possibly be, and I can afford to let it sit until I think it's as good as it possibly can be.
Yeah, because you're doing it for a passion rather than turning a profit.
Exactly.
Correct. Well, like a lot of businesses are kind of that way. So I wanted to ask what is the strangest, most out there beer that you have liked or that you've tried that you find indescribable? For me, it was smoke beer. That was the most weird. It tasted like liquid bacon. So I'm curious what – because you have a lot of beer tasting experience, I would imagine. Which one is one that sticks out to you, Fred?
This last Saturday at Winterfest, we had a Spearmint Goes, and it was one of those beers where I thought you smelled it and it smelled like fresh spearmint. And then I'm like, I don't know about this. And I took a sip and it was absolutely amazing. So the smell was unlike the taste, if that makes sense.
What did it taste like?
It tasted like a sour, a little tart, and just it finished off with a little bit of spearmint. It was actually very good. Mm-hmm. Very good. But that's the strangest beer I've had.
Well, that's interesting. Does anything come to mind for you, Will?
Right now, we just finished doing a sour in an oak barrel that we have at the brewery. The oak barrel was a Jim Beam barrel to begin with, and then it turned up after we had exhausted the Jim Beam character from the barrel. Some wild bacteria or Brettanomyces wild yeast showed up in the wood inside the barrel. So we started putting our beers in there at the end of 2015 and trying to see what kind of flavor character we were getting out of that. We were really, really happy with the first two beers we brought out of that barrel. This last one, which was the third one that we brought out, the beer sat in the barrel for a full year with wild cherries. It was a high-gravity Belgian golden beer with tart cherries, and it had a great sour character to it, as well as kind of a musky, almost like an aged wine.
So, well, with the wine barrel, you said, right?
Well, it was a Jim Beam barrel to begin with. Okay. But I will tell you, people ask me now, you know, to describe it, and I really can't describe it as a beer because it doesn't really resemble a beer. It resembles more of like a cidery wine, but it's you know, 12% alcohol too, so it's very strong.
Yeah, that's about the same as wine.
But it's a very interesting and complex beer, so I think we're really, we're pushing that limit on people's palates.
Yeah, that's interesting too. The area here would have a different kind of a palate, I think, than someplace else because, you know, we're beach, tropical location.
Absolutely.
I wanted to ask you, do you have an unusual one, Don?
I think probably Utopias, which is made by Sam Adams. It comes out every other year. It's in a very unique container bottle. It costs $200 a bottle, and I forget how many ounces it is. It's around a quart for $200. There's no carbonation. It's 38% alcohol, which means it's 56 proof.
Yeah.
And it's just an incredible flavor. It tastes like a port, except every port I've ever had one predominant flavor in it. You can taste it and you'd say, well, this tastes like apricots or it tastes like plums. Utopias, you taste five or six or seven different things, and every other year that they make it, it tastes a little bit different. It's just a very unusual. There's some beers in there that are 30 years old.
Wow.
He just does an incredible job with this beer. Some people don't like it.
Is it kind of a Solera aging process or something that they do?
I'm not sure. Hmm. I don't know if he gives any information out on that particular beer.
Well, that is interesting, and I really want to keep talking about this, but we are out of time. That is all the time we have left for our discussion of craft beer. I feel like we barely scratched the surface, and there's a lot to talk about.
Yeah.
If you'd like any information about home brewing or local brews, or if you'd like to continue following our discussion on the death of Fidel Castro, check out our website at wgcunews.org. Just click on the Gulf Coast Live tab at the top of the screen. And the conversation continues on social media. On Facebook, we're at WGCU Public Media. And on Twitter, use the hashtag GCL to tweet at WGCU. This is Gulf Coast Live on WGCU, NPR for Southwest Florida. Our show is made possible through the generous support of the Elizabeth B. McGraw Foundation. The show today was produced by Matthew Smith. Our production engineer is Richard Chin Kui, and additional help came in from A.J. Leonard. Next week on Gulf Coast Live, we go to 5 days a week, and we begin Monday with a look at Florida's panther population. While it's growing, conservationists say that it's not nearly enough, but ranchers feel differently. We'll have both sides of that story Monday from 1 to 2, and be sure to tune in all week during the 1 o'clock hour for Gulf Coast Live every weekday and Sunday at 11. Thanks for listening. I'm Julie Glenn. Llego a Puerto, voy para Mayarín. De Alto Cedro.